Welcome to Nerds Before Birds. Each week on the show, we take a look at a film and attempt to answer the question, does it soar like an eagle or simply flip the bird?
Welcome back!
It's almost on par with the actual Rotten Tomatoes Metacritic scores.
Never seen a sonogram roll its eyes before, but it did.
I'll do my best to tell these two losers what happened.
Well, if you're still here, we do know things, don't worry.
If any movie is below 6 on IMDb, then it's probably not worth watching.
I always have what I want to say in my head. It's like, oh, yeah, that's the perfect way to word it. It's not.
And that's the podcast, guys. Thank you. We've got a Patreon, which is patreon.com/nerdsbeforebirds, where you can go and listen to the rest of this podcast from the start.
Great podcast.
I'm Paul.
Thanks for watching, guys. That was a great episode. Really appreciate it.
We had fun. We laughed. Thanks for watching this audio podcast. That's impressive.
Everyone is going to be really, really confused by this, like that we start at the end.
Paul, can you do the outro now? That'll be great.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I just did.
Can we not do this whole thing through the whole thing? Like, the plot itself is bad enough, that let alone trying to do this in reverse. Anyway, so...
I can't believe you made that joke.
Are you here, Dean?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, cool.
I'm here.
All right. So, I'm Jason. Welcome to Nerds Before Birds, the podcast where you find reviews, rankings, and general discussion on all things pop culture. Or should I say... Yes, we're doing Tenet tonight.
That's I didn't know you spoke Danish.
I know, completely Danish. But it's, if you want to play that back in reverse, that's exactly the opener, because we're going in parallel timelines tonight with
Shibuya.
With Tenet. What a movie. We are talking about.
Or if in reverse.
You say Tenet backwards.
Tenet.
We are talking all about Tenet, the film where a black Klansman, Edward Cullen Batman, and non-gold Aisha and Kick-Ass take on Evil Perot in this time-bending, head-scratching thriller.
Now, say that, but try to make it more racist.
Black Klansman? He's from Black Klansman. He's the lead role. It's David Washington.
Like,
Movie. That's right.
Yeah, no, he's in a movie. That's called The Black Klansman. Well,
sorry. I thought you just saw him at your meetings.
No. My God. you guys, you realize that this is a film podcast, right?
What?
It is.
Podcast,
it's funny.
Where we talk about film.
We talk about film.
This is woodworking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so not woodworking.
What did you guys think of this movie? Carrying on, what do you guys think of this movie? Come on.
Znaith dug zo ti to thai. Or, I thought it was good, thanks.
Yep, cool.
Okay.
Yep.
No, I thought it was good as well. You're still going. Sorry. Please continue.
That was my intro.
Oh, my God.
Jeez. Okay, so, here's the thing. So, I watched this movie. The first time I watched it, absolutely loved it. Thought it was really cool. Hurt my head. Didn't get most of what I was seeing. Went to see it again a second time last weekend.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I loved it even more. There is so much. And obviously, like, it's a Christopher Nolan film, so you'd expect it.
Yes. Yeah.
But there's just so much that you pick up on. And I think I also, like, I was able to, I have more of an appreciation, surprisingly, for the dialogue. Which, because, like, the first time you watch it, was like, this is some of the worst dialogue in a Christopher Nolan movie.
Oh, no, it's terrible dialogue.
It is terrible. But, like, there are so many double meanings and so many secret, like, sneaky kind of phrasings in this movie that you just don't realize. The other thing is, I think, like, some things now make a lot more sense. Some other things make less sense. And I'm pretty sure I'm just overthinking a lot of stuff. But holy crap. Yeah. This is a movie that I'm going to probably enjoy every single time I watch it, and I'm going to watch it a lot, and I'm going to watch it with subtitles on, and I'm going to watch it, like, you know, frame by frame to figure out, and I'm going to watch it backwards, because holy crap, there's a lot going on.
Doesn't make more sense. There's a line of dialogue that the doctor tells the protagonist, which is the dumbest name in the world, but, like, can we just get that out of the way? Right. Like, that is so stupid.
Do you want to be more lazy?
Yeah, that is very lazy. But also, I feel like it's Christopher Nolan saying right there, is like, look, characters don't matter in this movie. I'm not going to put any effort into the characters.
Characters do not matter in this movie at all. Like, the characters are, like, completely sidelined.
All I'm worried about is the concept. If he wanted to be clever,
he could have just given the guy a name that is one of those words that's reversed, like Bob or Hannah, if it was a female.
Yeah,
if you want to be real clever with it.
That's not bad. Or like,
but it's just Christopher Nolan.
So, yeah, Eve? Like, the like what would you say? Like, Gatorb or something like that. Like, in instead of, or Gatorb. Gatorb?
No, like an name that's the same backwards pro tag as...
Kind of thing. Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like, you give him the name. But,
I see what you're
the reverse word is real. Oh.
And it'd be a reverse pro tag. Yeah, but no, it's so stupid, though. Like, he's had really dumb names in his in the past, though. Like, Maul and Cobb. Like, they're kind of, like, from Inception. But anyway,
so he looks around a room and it's just like, Cobb.
What about, like Bane? What a stupid name is Bane.
Jeez. Bane, yeah, and that Batman. Like, who? Batman, who came up with
what
that?
The hell? That's
he didn't create those characters, boys.
No, okay. I reckon, yeah, he should have been called Yug name.
Yug name.
Yeah, why is that?
Main guy. Main guy.
Oh, my God.
You're welcome.
Anyway, so the doctor tells the protagonist at one stage that don't try and understand it, just feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's like the most audience. Like it's the most not subtle way of telling people not to think about the movie logic and just like, you know, go with all the crap that we're about to serve you up kind of thing.
I feel like the next step would have just been for her to like just like, all right, let's pause the movie here and then just pause like the movie. Eyeball the camera and say, okay, people, don't think about this.
Here we go.
Off we go.
Because when she comes in, she's like explaining like the whole reverse bullets and stuff. And when that was happening, it was about like maybe 30 minutes into the movie. I'm like, I'm wondering if this is going to be a dud of a movie. Like at that point, I was actually really feeling like it was going to be like really horrible, but yeah. Anyways,
What did you think, Paul, actually?
I'll go on to Paul. What did you think? Did you like it?
I liked it, but again, the dialogue. I think at some points it felt like he was being clever for the sake of it, and he just Googled a series of buzzwords about time.
Yeah,
and was just like entropy.
Yeah, reverse.
And just throwing that in there.
Yeah.
Like, entropy.
I finished it. And, you know, once it's all revealed and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. I get it. Mm-hmm. Very hard to explain, but you get it.
Yeah.
I just don't think it had... I just think it lacked that punch. Like, you know, you get to the end of Interstellar or you get to the end of The Prestige and there's all these, like it hits. There's the turn and it hits you and you're like, oh, damn, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it really had that. It had it, but just not to the level that I was expecting.
That's
especially
fair.
With it being so far the only big release of 2020.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah, so far. Yeah, so far.
So maybe my expectations were too high. I don't know. But
Did you see
I liked it. I thought it was good. Uh-huh. I was saying to the guys that I saw it with, it had like those elements that made the third Harry Potter my favorite, where they're going through the first pass and like he gets hit in the head with a rock. And you're like, that's so weird. Where did that happen?
Right.
Yeah. And then you cut forward half an hour and he's the guy throwing a rock at him. And I love
Back to the Future as well, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly right.
So obviously, we're going to get into some spoilers. And
what did you think, Jason?
If you haven't seen the movie,
Jason, what did you like? Did you think? He's already told us.
You should already know this by now. But
you liked it.
He told us in the past.
We're going to get into spoilers first. If you haven't seen the movie, and
can't believe you
see the movie,
Jason,
probably jump out now and go and watch the movie and come back and then listen to the podcast.
If you do that, then this is kind of like time travel.
Whoa!
Yeah, it is. It is kind of like that. Yeah, a little bit.
You can pause. So, we'll be right here waiting for you.
Spoiling the movie a little bit, but when they go into the art thing at the holding bay or whatever in the airport.
The secret airport.
Yeah, the secret airport. And they encounter the two guys, one in verse and one going regular sort of ways or whatever. Did you know it was them straight up?
I had a hunch.
No.
I had a hunch.
I actually thought it was them, but uh-huh. what confused me, I was like, yep, that's definitely him. And he's definitely just seen himself, like, kind of thing. Because of the way that he looks at him, and it's like so obvious, kind of thing.
Oh, when Arpats rips off.
Yeah,
the mask.
Even before that, I was like, he's fighting himself, kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. It just made sense that he was fighting himself
from the future.
But the thing that I didn't get is, I thought it was two people, and I didn't realize that it was him being both people, which I thought was really clever.
Well, there is a line in the next scene. They say that when he meets up with what's-her-name.
Because he says one of them is inversed and one of them wasn't, kind of thing.
Yeah,
and then she's that hints that the fact that
Priya was like, are they the same person?
Which is really cool. Like, and it does make sense in retrospect, and when you go back and watch it again, which is really cool. But I definitely thought that they were back there, and then I was like, there's a few things that I still don't fully get. But I did enjoy the movie. I don't think it's the best Christopher Nolan movie.
I agree with
But I will rewatch it. I think one of the things about Christopher Nolan is it's really great about Christopher Nolan. He has lots of dense expositional dialogue covered by noisy environments and loud orchestral scores. And I wonder if this movie would be a lot easier to understand if you could hear what the hell was going on with subtitles.
Yeah,
how do you?
That's what I was meaning by, like, I'm actually definitely going to watch this movie with subtitles and probably understand it more. But
and
I was like,
the first 40 minutes, I was like just annoyed
when they're on the yacht. But when they're sailing, they're just like yelling into wind, and you'd kind of.
I wanted the 4K HD, Blu-ray disc of Interstellar, for example, to come with the project file, so you can mix that music down, so you can bring it to a level where it's not red. Like,
with Interstellar, it kind of works okay because the music is really loud, but everything that's going on is very self-explanatory, and there's not much, like, complex dialogue that's actually fed over the top. It's like, one line here or there. With this, they've got, like, pages of dialogue, and then this massive score explanation
as to the rules of the world, and you're missing most of it.
Can I say-
Yeah.
And Dean, I'm sure you did pick this up. Mm-hmm. The music was a thing that I was listening out for because I was wondering if they were going to do it. But did you notice that every time they went inverse,
the music
was backwards?
Yeah. I found that.
It was always on the beat, which is why they had that very staccato-y beat of a song. But when they flipped it, the beat's still there and it still works. But the melody is flipped. I love that.
Particularly, it's so cool. Mainly in the last, in the big battle scene.
In the fight.
Yeah. And the second time
because I was- Inverse pincer move or whatever it's called.
Yes.
What do they call it? Is the it pincer inverse move. Pincer?
Multi-timeline pincer move.
Because I think it was pointed out to me. I didn't pick up on that this first time, and then someone pointed it out to me afterwards. And the second time I was listening out, I was like, oh, it was probably you, actually.
You didn't pick up on that on the first time around, though?
Actually,
there's a lot to focus on.
Paul, do you remember me telling you that there was a the thing about the music, how when it goes in reverse, it actually the melody reverses?
Oh my god.
Huh. I'll pass that on.
Thanks.
Hang on a second.
Oh my god. Is this gonna be tonight? Like, is this how we're gonna do this? Like, we're like gonna confuse ourselves in just the podcast form. We're gonna confuse ourselves and we won't
more
even get to the plot because we won't even because it's
yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. Nice.
That's the plan. That's what I'm thinking anyway.
Yeah, that's a great idea for
buckle
this.
Buckle up. So here we go. Let's get into it.
So let's get into this movie. So it begins with the protagonist, and that's his name.
Stupid ass name.
So stupid.
Christopher Nolan letting you know straight away. These characters don't matter. I hope you like the stereotypes because that's what you're getting.
That's all you get today.
Let's just call him JD because it's
JD.
John David. Yeah, JD.
Protagonist is a mouthful.
Yeah. Why not? So,
Denzel Jr.
John.
Should be
Denzel Jr.
Denzel Jr.
How much? Like, not in look, but
voice?
In voice and mannerisms is he Denzel Washington.
Yes.
Like, his walk and everything, so Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. it just, yeah, everything about him. Mm. Like, yeah, that's
just
all.
The,
like,
the way he phrases things and the way he pronounces words and everything, it's like, oh my gosh, it's Denzel.
Yeah. It's like crazy. Looking at a young Denzel Washington. It's crazy.
It is. It's kind of like looking at Denzel's son or something. It's insane.
Yeah, it is. It's like looking at his son. It's kind of like Scott Eastwood looks like a really, really young Clint Eastwood without the like the mole on his face that he has. Like that's like the only difference between the two of them. If you get like a picture of them side by side,
it's like Colin Hanks looks so much like his mum.
Yeah.
Glenda Hanks. Wendy Hanks.
Wendy
so,
Wanks.
The protagonist, he goes to the opera. Wanks. And it's not the opera. It's an opera house in Kiev, but they're like, there's a symphony playing or something like that playing. Mm-hmm. And there is-
Symphonic
he's
orchestra.
He's running an undercover CIA operation. Mm-hmm. And there is an- attack on the opera house, and in the process of trying to get a they're trying to
get an undercover agent
that's been so he
he's
goes in and burnt. He gets saved by a random masked soldier with a distinctive red tag on him, on his rucksack. And the protagonist, oh my God, JD, is then captured by the bad guys and he's tortured on train tracks and everything. Mm-hmm. Pardon?
Did you mention that the bullet was going in reverse? Or not?
Oh, yeah. There's a bullet that goes in reverse. It's like just a side sort of throwaway kind of thing.
Hey,
it's
make
really
sure
bizarre,
you mention that the bullet is going in reverse.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Just stop. Just stop.
I think, look, plot-wise,
it's already bad
let's
enough.
Let's shelve that because it's already confusing.
It's already confusing. So,
Just you wait.
He's been tortured and then he has, like, he doesn't give up any information. He just decides to have a cyanide pill and just dies.
Yep.
But apparently the cyanide pill is fake and it was a test to see if he'd give up any of his colleagues who are all dead anyways. So, I don't know what he had to give up because everyone else dies, right? Except for him. And then there was an artifact that the at the Kiev Opera House that was taken by the bad guys as well. So, he meets up with his boss afterwards and the boss is like, yep, you passed the test. I'm going to send you off to this organization called Tenet and they're going to help you to basically track down whatever this thing is that was missing. And he's then introduced to a scientist who, this is where she like says to him, basically, you know, don't try and understand what's going on. Just feel it. Mm-hmm. And she shows him these bullets that actually shoot in reverse and they go back into the gun and everything goes backwards in time because it's from the future because future people created it, which is a common Christopher Nolan trait now I see from Interstellar.
Yes,
future people just came out of nowhere and created this thing. Yeah, future people.
I do kind of really appreciate that because like with Christopher, I rewatched Inception the other night and a similar thing where like the device already exists in the world. Whereas, like, another writer might think, oh, what about this concept? Let's look into the creation of the, like, you know, the device or, like, how this comes to be and go into, like, whereas, like, Christopher Nolan has a tendency to just be like, you know what? I want to explore this kind of, you know, thought, like, physics-defying, gravity-defying idea. We're just going to set it in the middle of this world after like years after this thing's already in existence and get to the fun bit where we can play with it as much as we want.
Which also, is fair. It's kind of what you want.
Hmm? It is. It's
I agree with you.
Yeah. It's what you want to see. And also Inception, so much easier to understand. Like it looks compared to this movie. It is just so like,
because I think it's because they're dealing with something that physically makes sense to us. Like, as they go along, you're like, you go deeper and deeper in the levels, you can manipulate things, and that's fine. But all you're doing is you're just manipulating. You're not like, inverting time so you're talking to your past self about the future whilst driving a car backwards. Like, all of that stuff. Once you start layering it together, you're like, I don't get
it. And the thing about Inception as well is that you can suspend your disbelief even more so because it's within a dream world.
Yeah, that's true.
So, there's like, there's a level of like disbelief that you can accept because you're like, oh, yeah, it's a dream. Like, but it's
effectively just a lucid dream.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically,
where you can do whatever you want. Yeah.
What Inception has that this movie doesn't is they have a character that is specifically in this movie, like in Inception.
They have just a character.
They have Ellen Page's character, which exists only so that people can throw exposition at her from the start. She's the introduction to the world.
The protagonist is, though. But like he's
the difference is that in Inception, it happens almost immediately, where they're explaining the rules of the world almost immediately to Ellen. As soon as Ellen Page comes into it, like, they're talking about how the rules work.
There's that less kind of time stuff, to wait.
It doesn't happen until like halfway through this movie when things start going.
And that's where
going.
It's frustrating. Like, and there's also no character to latch onto because like literally at the end of the movie, we know nothing about the protagonist as a character.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't have any arc. Like he doesn't have like any sort of, it goes nowhere. Kind of thing, like in a way, like you find out that he's kind of the start of it all or whatever, but that's
get more of an appreciation on a second viewing, Chase, for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know I will, but but I just think like there's certain things in Inception that you can sort of grab onto if you don't understand the movie itself, and that's the characters. Whereas in this, it's kind of absent of those characters. So when you're sort of in this sort of no man's land of just being thrown around for the first 40 minutes of the movie,
you're like, what the heck's going on?
What do you grab onto in that moment? What do you actually attach yourself to?
Other than
really confused.
And happy to be back at the movies.
Yeah, yeah, and happy to
you
be there.
You latch on to your Frozen Coke and Maltesers and just enjoy the ride.
Because, Leo in Inception has, he's got, such a rich backstory with his...
Yeah, he does.
With the wife dying and all that, there's just, and the kids and there's the emotional...
And there's that emotional weight to it. Yeah. And you know his emotional motivation is his kids and he wants to get home to them. And that sort of runs through the story. And if you don't understand any of the dream stuff, you can at least appreciate that kind of thing.
For sure. This is kind of like if they took the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character from Tenet and made him Inception and made him the main guy.
From Project Power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine. And, I like the movie. Like I said, I really like the movie, actually. Mm. And I enjoyed a lot of it. I like the complexity, but I like it as a film in the way of, I suppose, the talent and the technical side of things.
And the concept.
But not in the way of the concept. Rather than the actual characters. And a lot of the times, I like to watch movies because of characters. And this kind of doesn't have that. It's kind of like it feels a bit cold overall. To the end of it.
Sure.
I think that's why it lacks that punch.
Yes,
that,
like you say, like
all
you,
the other ones had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's the resolution in Inception that has, he gets to see his kids.
Yeah.
Where maybe win in the real world or not. Who knows? But
there's those hooks. It's stupid, but.
So, similar thing, what is your favorite Christopher Nolan movie?
Yeah, Paul, what is yours?
I see. My instinct is to say Interstellar. I genuinely think it went for half an hour, 45 too long. And he included that entire third act just so he could do that gag where the kid hits the baseball into the roof above him. So maybe it might be Inception. Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking
Prestige.
It's Dark Knight. Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Dark Knight is my favorite.
If you take out the Dark Knight series, because The Dark Knight is actually such a great movie.
Yeah.
On its own, it's a great movie. But I kind of in his original movies, Or yeah, like semi-originals. I mean, like, The Prestige is based on a book. I think they're all based on books and stuff. The ones that aren't sort of like franchise movies. I think The Prestige is by far like my favorite of his.
Definitely.
But that's because it's favorite. Got like a great blend between the characters and the concepts. And it really works because you like you really care about the conflict between the two magicians
because you get connected to both of them.
Yeah,
you that's the thing. Like,
both and there's of them. And there's so many little things. And this is one of those. This is one of the things. Like, you know, without spoiling the movie because some people haven't seen it. Yeah, I have. So
what the hell are those people doing?
I know. But like those moments where he's talking to his wife and he's like, and every now and then his wife's like, you know, oh, today's just one of those days you don't love me. And then today it is.
Yeah,
and it's great. Like, there's those tiny little things that are nothing. They're throwaway sentences. But it makes so much sense at the end.
Yeah. And the characters make sense too. But like he's, okay, so getting back to this. So he gets pointed in the direction of going to Tenet. And, and he eventually, he tracks down a arms dealer in Mumbai. And I actually like this scene. Like he in this whole situation, he actually gets introduced to Neil, who is Robert Pattinson's character, and
Arbats.
They just sort of like get introduced, right? Like I don't even know how he ends up there.
And he sort of just appears. Diet Coke.
But
like I think then,
is he Denzel British Secret Junior. Service or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, he makes a call. Yeah. He's like, "Hey, I need an assist." And then his mate on the phone's like, "All right, I'll send someone over." And then next scene is, "Hey, I'm your assist." That's pretty much it. Yeah.
So he goes and meets up with Priya, who is this arms
Priya
dealer.
Priya.
And she's an arms dealer in Mumbai, and her husband sort of fronts the operation, but she's the brains behind it. And
I like that.
I like that too. I thought that was cool.
Because I think stereotypically it's Mumbai. They're like, the men's the head of the household. Mm-hmm. And it's nice. It's nice to see, like, especially in that part of the world, that social constraint get challenged. Because I am woke.
It makes sense because it's Mumbai, not Dadbai. Jeez.
That's bloody right, Dean. Boom.
You know what? So one of my favorite Dollop episodes Garrett Morgan. So Garrett Morgan is the inventor of traffic lights. This is just a random fact for you guys.
What?
Thank
so
you.
He from invented, the dollop. Yeah, there's a dollop on him. So he invented traffic lights. This is the person, the real life person. He is from like 1963 or something like that. He died, but he invented traffic lights and also like gas masks and a bunch of other things. But he was an African-American man. And during the time, because nobody would actually buy for him, he would actually pay a white man to stand at stands in like exhibit halls and pretend to be him.
Jeez.
Kind of thing.
Wow.
So but he was so, like, if you ever get a chance to actually read his history, he was, like, an amazing, amazing man. But, like, during the time, because of everything, like, the racial prejudice and that, he wasn't really accepted for his inventions. So, he had to pay a white man to do, like, to pretend to be him. But he was very successful and he saved a lot of lives in his later life as well. By inventing gas masks and stuff like that, too.
It's like how Mary Shelley first published Frankenstein in her husband's name. Similar thing. Like, she just, no one wanted to read a book written by a female writer.
That's crazy.
Very, very different world, which is fantastic. But holy crap. That's really interesting.
Anyway, so
look at us.
We know things.
Let's go. We do. Boys.
There we go. So she basically tells him that she's part of Tenet. And she's going to help him out. And she points him in the direction of a Russian arms dealer or something like that. Like, he's an arms dealer as well, right?
But yes. They're all arms dealers.
Andre Sator, I think, is his name, right?
Yeah.
Sator.
It's Kenneth Branagh doing like a really terrible Russian accent.
Yeah.
It's yeah. He's look him up in the dictionary and he's like hammy. That's his performance in his movie. It's just literally.
I think Christopher Nolan was just like, hey, you know that really memorable character that you played in that Jack Ryan movie? Ignore what everyone else is saying.
Can you do that again?
It was great. Just do that just with a little bit more.
He directed that cliched movie.
He did. That's right.
Yeah, he directed himself to that terrible performance.
Did you hear all about the onset drama between him and Christopher Nolan?
No.
He kept wanting to take over and direct this movie because he said he's got incredible directing chops because he directed the hit film Artemis Fowl. He knew his place. He shut his damn mouth.
Yeah, I was hoping
that movie sucks.
Chris, look, apparently I've been doing it wrong. Can you show me how to direct a movie?
I'm supposed to direct people.
Kenneth Brenner's next movie is going to be fantastic. He's going to come out of this with some new appreciation.
Oh, so that's how you do a high concept. Got it.
Great. Yeah. So then he goes and he realizes that basically, I'm going to just call him Kenneth Branagh. I can't remember his name. What's it? It's Sator, right?
Sator.
Kenneth Branagh, it'll be easier if I just say Kenneth Branagh because then people who haven't really seen this can picture him as well.
Kenny?
KB?
No, let's not.
You got JD and KB. Let's go.
What? No, stop. Okay, so JD, the protagonist, goes and meets with Kenneth Branagh's estranged wife, Kat, and he discovers that Kenneth Branagh is blackmailing her with a forged painting that she sold him years ago that turned out to be a fake. This is where this movie kind of gets like ridiculously complex in the side plot. Kind of thing.
It's like,
hey, you know what? What's great about this movie is like, let's have it really complex in these really high like concept ideas, and then let's just give them a really complicated subplot that doesn't really matter in the end of things at all.
I'll tell you why they did this.
Yeah.
I don't actually know why they did the artwork like forgery thing, but I feel like because they mentioned that there's two of them, which to me now rewatching thinking maybe there was only one and one was going back in time.
One was going back in time, that makes sense, but it's still no point to this movie.
That whole plot was the exact same as Raiders. They could have they could have done nothing. And everything still would have happened the way it happened.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to.
Yes and no, but I get where you're going with. Like, the actual painting is inconsequential and it means nothing in the end.
The guy who, like, forged the Goya painting is named Arepo. Arepo? Arepo? Arepo?
Probably Arepo. Not Arepo.
He was such a rapo of Goya art. Arepo is opera backwards.
Well, look at that.
Yeah. Look at that.
Opera.
Look at that. There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. We've cracked it. We know exactly what this movie's about.
No, like, it's about actually opera. Legit. So there's this thing called... it's a weird thing that I found out. Thank you, Wikipedia, by the way. There is a thing called a Sator square. Rotos square, which is a word square containing a 5-word Latin palindrome, which actually reads the same front to back.
Front, which is
top,
tenor.
Up, top to bottom. So, the 5 words are rotas, sator, arepo, tenet, opera, rotas. And so, then backwards, it is sator, opera, rotas, opera, tenet, arepo, sator.
It's a palindrome, so yeah.
But also, top to bottom is also sator, arepo, tenet, opera, rotas. Yeah. Okay. And so, all 5 of those words are found in this movie. Because sator is the Russian guy. Yep. Arepo is the forger, tenet, which is obviously opera, which is where the opening scene is. And ROTAS is the name of the security system in the Freeport.
Oh, that's so, kind of cool, nice. Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's an odd detail.
Somebody did a bit of research there,
but yeah.
Have you guys heard of this thing called the Sator Square?
Oh my god! Yeah, so
hey, Paul, you should ask if I've heard about the Sator Square.
I did. Tell me about it. But
basically, At Hazard has a son with Sator, and they basically he's like
off screen. I'm that not happens gonna- off screen.
Yeah, they have. It happens off screen. Basically,
that looks so weird in inverse. You got the kids crawling back in.
Oh my god!
Reverse alien.
That's so crazy.
Sorry, without context, it's just like you're watching parents that aren't happy with the product, so they
there's
put
a soundbite for the next intro.
Yeah. So. She's estranged from him because of the whole mix up with the artwork, but she didn't mean to do it. It was like unintentional. She just accidentally got a forgery, and he feels completely betrayed by her.
I think it was an intentional thing actually, because her whole thing is that she is an art dealer, and she, if anyone could tell. That wasn't?
Yeah.
It was an accident?
She should have... She actually says it. She says, I didn't intentionally do it, but I might as well have because of how he now views me. The betrayal is too much. And she said maybe it was because I was too close to the guy selling it that I just believed that it was real kind of thing. And it was a very
good
forgery.
That's why he was blackmailing her. He was blackmailing her credibility. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, basically, he's like... blackmailing her, threatening her to go to prison or like, you know, just taking away her. What did you say then, Paul? The kid? Yeah, Sato take away the kid and all that kind of stuff.
Take away custody.
So she,
kind of thing.
Yeah, to have custody of, like full custody of the child and stuff. And
also so Michael Caine makes an appearance.
He does, he basically mentions that there was
boy.
He mentions that there was an explosion a few weeks beforehand at the area where Sator was born and grew up, and that was kind of like just a throwaway line, but it actually goes to the end of the movie where the final battle begins.
That actually, that's,
because
yeah,
it's
'cause
10
that
days
is
beforehand
like
or whatever,
Stasic 12 or something.
I didn't even realize.
So. So that kind Stalask of like 12. That's where they realize I think that that's when the final showdown's going to occur. Mm-hmm. So Kate tells the protagonist about the last time that they were truly happy was when they were in Vietnam and she'd gone off the ship that they were on, that they were just like on this yacht that they were on. She'd gone off to the shore and then she was coming back and she'd seen another woman dive off the ship. And she thought that the other woman was someone that was having an affair with Sator, but as we find out who that is later on. But
we do.
But she envies her freedom that she seems to have because he's got this whole hold on her kind of thing. So the protagonist agrees to help her by stealing the painting so that then he wouldn't have anything to blackmail her with.
Yep.
And it is being kept in a storage facility at Oslo Airport. And the way that they're going to do that is by crashing a jet into the hangar because, I don't know.
They're doing it so they want to trigger an alarm. They're going to hold their breath.
Surely there could have been an easier way, right?
Hell no, dude.
Probably not a more visually interesting way.
Yeah, you
tell
me.
That's true. Like,
oh, man.
Yeah. And they crashed an actual plane for this scene.
So really?
Did they really?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. They got a real plane for it. Like they, yeah.
Of
so
course they
very
did.
Expensive stunt.
Because Christopher Nolan doesn't believe in VFX. It's a myth.
No. Well, apparently this movie has something like, I think it was like 480 visual effects shots.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Like it's something insanely small for,
can
like
you imagine how much roto there would have to be for a friggin' reversal.
Yeah.
Like where that car's driving and then it flips, like it's upside down and it flips and it bounces back. Mm-hmm. You've got to then rotate that in the scene. And I could think of nothing worse.
Yeah.
Oh, lightsabers. Lightsabers suck. But
what do you mean roto it in? Like,
because it's the whole cars are driving it. The rest of the scene's moving forward through time. Yeah. And then you got to
reverse a car crash.
But
they did, what they did is they crashed the car in straight, like they crashed the car straight forward and the other cars are driving in reverse.
Is that how they actually did it?
Yeah, that's how they did it.
Okay. I know that there's a couple of Yeah,
because
of those
there's no visual, like there's only 429 visual effects shots, right?
Yeah, right.
So it's literally playing back footage in reverse is all
thought,
it is.
I thought they were putting the car on wires and actually flipping it from upside down back to driving.
No, that makes no sense. What they do, like if you watch the two driving cars, like the main SUVs.
Yeah.
If you watch them, they're like not quite right kind of thing. They're sort of like they're sort of moving just as you would in reverse kind of thing, but it's playing backwards the other
surely
way.
Surely there are shots where things have been comped in, like the final battle scene. You can't have people running full ball backwards.
I did notice that though. I did notice some of those people are running backwards. Like they're for sure running backwards because you watch their feet. And it looks so strange.
I reckon they would have just maybe had like a stable cam, run everyone one way, and then run them the other way, and then you just add that fake camera shake later on, and you've suddenly got two inverse armies.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there are definitely comp shots in here because some of the stuff.
429 visual effects shots is pretty small. But when you have like you have films like I don't know in Avengers Endgame, it's pretty much like you know like 4,000 or something like that.
I only counted two visual effect shots in that.
Yeah, that was all real. Yeah. Like honestly, I think a lot of it is people running backwards. Like and because some of these fight scenes look ridiculous. They look weird as and. And at times, I was like, it's on the edge of, like, almost self-parody at times because of the way that it's, like, it looks. It just, yeah, okay. To me, that's how it came across. But, yeah, definitely those cars are driving in reverse.
Yeah. I was very much blown away by the choreography, to be honest.
Oh, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, I was, and I didn't pick up on many, like, there are a few shots, like, the first time JD's in reverse. You can definitely tell, like, he's doing his whole scene backwards.
In reverse.
In reverse, walking through. But some of the times, I was like, how the heck are they doing that? I have no idea. So,
Kenneth Branagh had to learn a bunch of lines in reverse as well, so that he could do, like, a bunch of scenes in reverse.
Because
I think that conversation, that main conversation when he's, like, in the inverse reality and he's watching him, I think a lot of that he actually said in reverse kind of thing. But, that's pretty cool.
That is totally doable, cool.
But very impressive.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a lot of work to do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And for that car crash scene, like the highway scene, I think it was 8 weeks of filming that one scene and they blocked off a highway for that whole time. So imagine living in that city and having a highway like blocked off for eight weeks.
Oh, dude. They could do that here. It wouldn't be a surprise.
It was actually only 4 weeks because like they did half of it forward time and then they just redid the first 4 weeks.
Anyways, so getting back to the plot of this movie, where are we at? What happened?
We're about 10 minutes in, I think.
So no, we're at Oslo Airport by now. Like, they crash a cargo jet into the hangar.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when they find two masked men inside the hangar. And one of them runs into a machine. Well, runs into the machine, disappears, and comes out
before
the other side. I don't know how it works, but yeah.
Can I quickly point out two things about this like scene? Or actually, the lead up to this scene? One, how great is the way John David Washington holds a teacup? I
never noticed.
We need to pause and appreciate that. Oh, it's just like, it's like Because he asks for a tea when he gets in when they're going in to do it. And then the next scene, they're like walking into the vault. And just like walking along and he's just like holding this. Look it up. Actually, I'll send you a photo.
Yeah, right.
He's walking around like with this tiny teacup and it's very funny. Pointed out. I was like, funny. But the other thing I want to point out is the two scenes before this when they're planning and they're debriefing about the airport. And they're planning this thing. I think, I'm not 100% sure, and I could be completely wrong about this, but I think I found something a little bit interesting. I sent you guys two photos and side by side.
Yeah.
Those scenes.
I love visual podcasts.
Look, we'll put this up on our socials because I want like, I want to get your take on this. Like, so these are two stills from the two scenes beforehand. One is where John David Washington's talking, like telling Robert Pattinson what he found in the vault in the Freeport. And the next scene is them talking about crashing a plane into it.
Yep.
Robert Pattinson's wearing the exact same thing as though it's two scenes directly after one another. But John David Washington is wearing something completely different.
Yeah.
Which makes me
think. Because it's different timing.
But why is he wearing the exact same thing?
So, he's wearing the exact same thing. I'll give you an answer for this because I'm pretty sure I know how it works. So, because he has gone back in time and he's actually playing through these events again, I don't think he had other clothes, basically. He's running through this timeline because he had to go back in time to actually meet John David Washington's character and then play through the week basically with him and build up his trust and everything and do everything with him. So I think that's what's occurred here is basically he's got like the one good outfit.
I think there is definitely time playing like a part in this.
Well, it's definitely like he's definitely gone back in time because he talks about it at the end. He says that we've had a great friendship and all this stuff, that this is just the beginning of the friendship for you, but it's the end of the friendship for me.
See,
and it means that he's actually,
Robert Pattinson hasn't done much time travel and like he's really? Done like incremental things to me. That's what I've like. It's actually John David Washington has gone back he's gone back quite a while. Cause it's like, there's a future for you in the past. And so, basically, John David Washington met a much younger Robert Pattinson, and then that's where he recruited him. And Robert Pattinson basically knows the history of the course of events through John David Washington.
This is getting deep into, like, theories. Oh, yeah. There is a theory that Kat's son is Neil, like Robert Pattinson.
Oh! So there you go.
Oh, you go, Jess.
No, you go, you go. You,
well, obviously, you elaborate he's blonde, on it. As is Max. Max's full name, Maximilian. You take the four letters at the very end of Maximilian and you get Neil.
Yeah,
is
okay.
Is really Maximilian?
That's his kid. Well, it's the kid's name. The kid's name's Max, which is Maximilian. And the four, the back four letters are Neil. Exactly how it's
that
spelled.
That is, wow. Okay, so maybe he has gone back in time. But for me.
Well, I think he definitely has because he talks about it right at the end. Mm-hmm. Like there's that conversation. That's the only thing
plus
that makes sense.
He's educated, he's British, and we've seen where that kid goes to school. It's a popular, you know, it's a expensive prep school. Okay. He's English. Sense.
So at some point, John David Washington, though, goes back in time and goes back to the past. Because that's what they're referring to in that last scene. That at some point, John David Washington's gone back. Way before these events.
I don't think they are. I think they're referring to his future.
What does there's a history for you in the past mean then? That's literally the line.
It's just Chris Nolan.
Pattinson says to
getting off on a typewriter.
Okay, do you want to hear my theory?
It's his past. Because it's Neil's past.
Yes.
Okay, you don't want to hear my theory.
There's a history for you in my past. That's what it is.
No, okay.
No, go on.
No, okay. So, like, we're looking at this very differently. But my theory is that John David Washington, in one of these scenes, most likely the one where he's talking about the interior of like and the layout of the Freeport, is actually John David Washington from the future. Come back in time on his way through.
Although there is a running thing where there's blue and red actually symbolize going forwards and going backwards. You know how they hint at it at the end.
Yep.
And
look at what he's wearing and in these two.
Yeah, he's wearing a blue. Yeah, I get that. So there could be something there.
So it's actually in these two scenes, the person that's not quite right is actually, because we never see the point where one conversation ends and the other starts. It just kind of cuts to the next scene. And I have a theory.
So you think it's not linear?
I don't think it's linear at all. Not for John David Washington. For Robert Pattinson, it is linear. And for John David Washington, he's talking to two different versions of John David Washington.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Oh, yeah. That's just messing with this movie way too much.
Yeah. That hurts. John David Washington's gone through the events of this movie and then he's gone back in time. And met Robert Pattinson somewhere before the court started this movie. And then throughout, he's meeting up with Robert Pattinson and giving him clues and hints to what's to come next. And that's what we're seeing here. That is my theory. I have nothing to back it up, though. So
yeah, no. That definitely could be something in that. Because there is that theme that they play with, like the red and blue, and it sort of comes throughout. Like one being walking forwards, one inversed sort of thing. I could warrant that. Cool. For sure.
Just to like but, completely mess with everything. But hey. And
but,
again,
but I definitely think Neil is the son. I think that makes sense.
That is incredible.
And
I really like that.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think it's one of those things you can't say it for certain, but I think that's a semblance of what we get at the end of Inception. Mm-hmm. It's that quick little like, oh,
yeah,
where did it's not
did
said.
It fall?
Did it fall? Did it wobble? I don't think
it wobble. Did I see
the same kind of thing?
That's the thing. Like anyone that says, "Oh, for sure he's awake," they're an idiot. Also, anyone that says, "Oh, for sure he's still dreaming," they're an idiot.
He's an idiot.
he's definitely awake though, because he's wearing his wedding ring.
Jason, you're an idiot.
It's every time he's wearing his wedding ring, he's awake, and that's why he's anyways, so everyone else is an idiot.
If anyone that watches Inception and isn't Jason, they're an idiot.
Yeah, they're an idiot. Yeah. So they crash a plane into this area. They get the painting. Oh no, they don't get the painting.
They don't.
Because it's not even there.
It's not there.
No.
Yeah.
What?
So it doesn't mean, like, it means that they don't need to be there at all. So they go into the building and they fight an inversed person who basically fights in reverse. It's really crazy. It's weird. They also fight a person that's not inversed. But in the fight, Robert Pattinson accidentally, like, takes off the mask of that person. And the protagonist does not see who that person is, but Robert Pattinson does. And realizing who it is, he lets them go, and he stops the protagonist from killing the first person that he's fighting.
But why?
We all ask. But I straight up thought it was both of them. I didn't realize that it was the same person later on, which is what we talked about
good. I love
at the beginning.
75% of the people in that scene were the one person.
Yeah, exactly.
The mechanics of it is just incredible. I really love it.
It's trippy.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get an answer, this masked man gets sucked out the door.
Out the door.
Sucked out the door.
By an implosion.
Yeah, is crazy. And so then afterwards, the protagonist goes and sees Priya, I think.
Yep.
And she explains about this machine called the Turnstile, which is like an inversion
WTF, mate,
device.
What's going on?
So let's talk about the Turnstile a little bit. Like the Turnstile is basically a machine where it rotates and a person can run in one entrance and run out another entrance. But when they come out the other entrance, time is going backwards for that person. So everything that they experience on that other side of the wall basically is going against them. So air is going differently, so they have to wear like a mask, like a oxygen tank of sorts that has inversed air, I suppose. I don't know how it works.
I think it's regular air, but normal air is, it won't go in the lungs.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now, but for, yeah, some, for yeah. us, we are like, so for them, it's basically as soon as they go in and like come out of this, it's like hitting rewind on
your yeah.
DVD. And so
yeah.
literally like right from that immediate point of going in, time is reversed from there. So they're basically, they can see themselves like walking backwards away from the, like the other entrance and everything yeah. happening in the other side. For everyone else, it looks like two of the same person went into a machine and then just disappeared.
Yeah. Yep.
One in reverse. Yeah. It is so trippy. But it I
is
love
trippy.
It is really it's weird.
It's really cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So they realize that Sato is basically somehow he's being helped by the future uh-huh. to build up his arms dealing and stuff. And he is in the process of creating a algorithm or putting together an algorithm of 9 parts
yep.
that mm-hmm. is capable of creating a machine that will basically create a collapse of the time.
Yeah.
Whatever. Continuum. Like yep. continuum. Yeah.
Yeah. So not fun stuff. Pretty.
For some reason, the future people that wanted to destroy the past mm-hmm. have sent this algorithm back into the past, but have separated it into 9 parts, like a Horcrux that can be brought together kind of thing. Like, yeah. it's like, it's so like, it's very, like when you think about the logistics, like the future people actually want to destroy the past, but they make it hard for the bad guy to actually get the algorithm in the first place kind of thing. Like they should have just sent it back intact, right?
No, like, it's okay. The one per- no. Did you- Yeah, so there's a line in the next Priya meeting where she talks about the person that invented the device was a bit of a yeah. Like a what's the guy who did the doomsday bomb? Not oh, I forget what his what, name.
Edison. Oh,
no,
Einstein.
No.
From the Manhattan Project?
Manhattan Project, yeah, sorry. The who's the other one? The one that, like, basically, well, basically Einstein, but, like, they use someone else's name. Basically, like, where they instantly regretted their creation.
Oh, yeah. Robert Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer. Yeah. So, it's a bit of that.
Where he's like, I've become death yeah. or whatever. Is that yeah. The quote?
Yeah.
Like,
I've pretty become much. Death? And so, this scientist who feared that this weapon, this bomb would destroy them and destroy everything, she breaks up her creation and sends it back in time so that, so right. it's not the people that are trying to destroy it, just to like reverse right. time. It's the person right. that created okay. it. And
I didn't pick yeah. up on that. I thought yeah. it was the future people because they were, well, the future people are helping him people. Discover it then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's they're helping him
yeah.
get it
they're
together.
They're helping him and get it back together. Yep.
So what we learn about Sato is basically he has, pancreas cancer or some sort of cancer and it's he's terminally ill
mm-hmm.
and he basically is like, if I die, the world dies kind of thing. That's
yeah.
his view. And mm-hmm. there's that line that's like really on the nose, but he's like, if like he says to his wife at one point, if I can't have you, then nobody
no
can. And that's
can
kind of his
you.
Mantra. Yeah. It's so bad. Yeah. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very dumb.
I want you to be a bad Russian. All right. What's my yeah. What's right. What's my like
motivation?
What's my direction? What's my motivation for this scene? You're a bad Russian. Go for it.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
Good.
Great. Thank you.
I'm on.
I'm on. That's it. That's it. Let me do it. Let me do the hammy performance that I'm gonna do. It's gonna be so over the top.
So
that speech that he gives, like in. When he like shoots her with the inverse bullet,
mm-hmm.
The speech just before that is just so over the top. Like it's just yeah.
Oh,
man, actually, no, it's the scene yeah. before that. Actually, it's when he first like goes in there and he is threatening her and he throws her on the ground and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, and like yeah. for like stepping on her and yeah, or,
yeah,
yeah.
So yeah. in that actually there is a scene that was cut and I think it was for a censorship. Sort of reasons, mm. but there was a scene where he was actually going to kill, like not kill her, but kick her he was going to like actually kick her when she was on the ground sort of thing. I understand why they cut it for censorship, but part of me is like, it would have been better if that scene was in there, because then he would have been a more horrible bad guy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're I know, he's too likable.
Like,
he's not likable.
He's just sort of like, he doesn't have, I don't like, at least if he was like terrible, like really, really bad beyond the point of any redemption, then like you'd enjoy him dying at the end. But in this, like,
what
he's not beyond, he is definitely beyond redemption. But what I'm trying to say is that he's kind of like, he's so two dimensional.
Yeah. Right.
That it's just, you don't care when he dies. Mm. Like at least if he did like something horrible to her,
I feel like kicking wouldn't be the answer though. Like, I feel like that's just more of the same of what we're already getting.
Well, I know that, but like, I mean, that was in the movie before they cut that scene, like they cut that just slightly shorter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was filmed. It makes sense that it would be in there just to make him more dislikable, I suppose.
I kind of reckon
that's kind of what
the way to make his character better is to make him less cliche villainy and give him a bit more like actually play with his likability. Because for me, there's nothing likable about him.
They sort of hint at it towards the end when he actually sort of like, there's that slight moment where he seems to be affectionate towards her. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of just a tiny, like the tiniest bit of like, I don't know, him being a little bit, I don't know, nice, more, I suppose.
Yeah. Human. I feel like human, if you gave, like, human, if you gave him like a Hans Gruber, like, you know, wit, or gave him something like a little bit of something that's slightly likable, you know, maybe he's just like,
maybe not make him Russian.
Give
Why
him
does
like
he
a
have to be Russian?
Because it's just so, you don't have to write as much if you're just like, they're Russian.
Yeah, they're Russian. He's Soviet Russian, just Russian. Yeah. He's Soviet Russian.
Put in like a cool dance scene, like make him the Sam Rockwell kind of, give him some Sam Rockwell moves, and then he's a like bad guy, that kind of thing.
I want a whole movie about Justin Hammer.
Yes. Well, I was thinking, like,
I love that character.
Justin Hammer, always bad guy in Charlie's Angels. Is that what you're thinking?
I thought you were actually going more the dance thing in Jojo Rabbit. Like, you've been doing a dance with the gun and stuff at the beginning of that.
Yeah, okay. He's about Charlie's Angels as well.
Yeah.
There's a common Sam Rockwell trait.
Yeah.
Doing,
if he's
like, going to
play a bad
dance.
He's good at dancing too.
Make him. Oh, he's the best. I love his dancing. Yeah. But yeah, something like maybe that, just, like, to play with this, like,
a guy in Jojo Rabbit, though.
That's true.
I mean, he's a Nazi, but aside from that,
actually, in Charlie's Angels, he made out to be a good guy that turns bad. In Jojo Rabbit,
he dances when he's a
bad
guy
that turns good.
So, yeah, that's true.
Well, that's for both those movies.
I mean, he's still a Nazi at the end of the movie, though. So.
Yeah.
There's a little, anyway.
There's a bit of redemption, but he definitely did not see
a little
that
bit
coming.
Of a redemption. So. Where are we at? What is happening in this movie? Who knows?
We meet Kenneth Branagh. I think we're actually at that point.
Yeah, we meet Kenneth Branagh. He arrives and he's on a boat pretty much for the whole of this movie.
Yep.
Pretty much. Except for there's like two scenes where he's not on a boat.
It's a bloody nice boat though.
But it's a very nice
boat.
And then when he's not on that boat, he's on a sailing yacht as well.
It's a bloody loud sailing
just like,
boat.
Yeah. Where Kat tries to kill him, but the protagonist saves the day, saves his life, and fortunate that he does, because you find out that there's basically a kill switch, like if he dies,
holy crap,
the whole thing will be like his whole plan will be enacted and everyone will die.
They don't even know about the kill switch at that point. So that's lucky.
Do you think that all his like goons are like they kind of worship him in some way?
It's a bit culty.
Because I was getting culty vibes from them.
I know.
I've got fear. I mean, this is a guy who like obviously he at some point he's talking to himself in the future. That's a given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what they're scared of. They're like, this guy. Well, maybe they don't know about. You know, inverse itself, but they're like, this guy just knows things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's probably a mix of, that like his his all-knowing kind of way about him.
That omnipresent kind of thing.
There's definitely something of his like demeanor, and he's just a really intimidating guy. And also, he's paying them probably buttloads, and that definitely like
that probably helps.
I just finished watching Narcos, and it's basically the Pablo Escobar kind of loyalty that all his drug dealers had.
True.
Yeah. Except Pablo Escobar is like, you know, he's weirdly more likable than this guy.
And that makes for a lot more charismatic.
Better bad guy. Anyway.
Yeah.
Mm.
So maybe you should have had like a middle section of this movie where Seda goes off and he does like a whole presidential campaign and tries to run for president.
Maybe.
Like, okay. That would have made him make him more likable.
There we go. Yes. Chris Nolan.
That's it right there.
Chris, three options for making better bad guys.
Subplot.
Yeah. One, you give him a dry wit like Hans Gruber. Give him some sweet dance moves like Sam Rockwell. Yeah. Or give him a cool moustache like Pablo Escobar. There you go.
That's it. Or a political campaign like Pablo Escobar as well.
If you can give us all three, then you've got Nacho Libre.
You got a freaking,
I thought you were going to say Donald Trump then.
He doesn't have a moustache. Nor can he dance.
An evil Freddie Mercury? Is that what you're going for?
So Seda, what is he up to? He almost dies.
Mm-hmm.
While they're on the sailing yacht because Kat tries to kill him. This is because she basically finds out that the painting had been moved before the crash and she'd been lied to by the protagonist to get close to Seda kind of thing. Because he wanted an introduction. That was his big thing.
Yeah.
He wanted an introduction to Seda. Mm-hmm. So Seda is like, I still own you basically, Kat. And the protagonist knows about this plutonium that they can get from an armored convoy.
Mm-hmm.
So this plutonium is actually the last artifact, and this is what he's been looking for a long time. So he's like, Seda's like, I'll agree to whatever you want kind of thing. And the protagonist is like, if you look after Kat, even though she tried to kill you, then we're all good. Like, I'll give you whatever you want kind of thing. So they have like a whole heist, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. They got like a fire truck, a bunch of different things.
Oh yeah.
In the middle of the heist, there is an inverted car that crashes. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of inverted stuff that's going on. And we realize that actually Seda's inverted and he's actually following them and sort of ambushing the whole heist to get the last artifact. And he's threatening to kill Kat if he doesn't give him the artifact. And he just gives up the artifact in the end. And they have this whole scene, this whole showdown in a turnstile sort of room.
Mm.
And on one side, they've got Seda going in reverse and he threatens to shoot Kat with the inverse bullet. And
then he does.
Then he does. He shoots her.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, he doesn't shoot her like in the head or anything. He shoots her in the side because he thinks that she's going to die slowly, I think. I think that's the idea.
Mm.
And because it's an inverse bullet.
He also threatens to shoot Kat with an inverse bullet.
Yep. There we go. And so basically, this is the part that I kind of struggle with.
Yeah.
Because they're like, nobody can heal an inverse bullet, yada, yada, yada. We're going to go back in time a few times, and somehow that heals an inverse bullet wound.
Because as they invert her, they're uninverting the bullet, as in the bullet is now going forwards.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, the bullet is now going in the same direction as time. And they're just going in reverse. And so that way it kind of slows down the effect. And there's like, it's very like, iffy the science here.
Yeah.
But it basically, stops the reaction of like the reverse reaction of the elements happening to the bullet.
So she's got this bullet hole, right? Mm-hmm. They go through it one time or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why do they not just go through the same machine again?
I don't know, Jason.
Because
they say like something like you can't come back from this or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, why can't you come back from this? Like, this is a machine that seems to be like operational. Like it's still operational. Why do they have to go to the airport to go through the another machine? Like, why do they even have to do that whole thing? And it's days between when they're being at the airport and gone through that inverse machine, right?
Right.
Like, why didn't she die in the meantime? She's still got a bullet in her.
But it stopped having a reaction to her. So the...
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that like... So it's basically one of those bullet wounds that would have been treatable if it was just a normal bullet. But because it was like having a reverse like...
Right.
It was like... Yeah, from what I understand, it's having an inverse reaction to the elements and that's causing a whole lot of problems... body. Like, and so then once that's like
see like it makes back, a weird kind of sense like mm-hmm. and that's fine
mm-hmm.
but when
you make
really,
the point about the yeah why didn't they just stay in that area for a week
yeah
and then go through it doesn't the same make, one
yeah and just go through the same one again like
because
there's no reason to go back to the airport.
It's bugging me because I don't have an answer for that one.
Like I'm sure it's Christopher Nolan and all hail Christopher Nolan, whatever.
wow.
I'm sure there's a reason in there, but it's hidden under like layers of dialogue that's exposition and probably a sound of a
and you need a subtitles
boat
to
pump
understand.
And some music. Yeah.
Why do you hate Christopher Nolan, Jason?
There's probably literally one line where they're like, this is the 110th time that this time things worked. And, you know, like if we go through it this 110th time, then it stops working. That's all that a turnstile has.
It's yeah, got
this the 110 rotations and you
it's
can't
only engineered
back.
For two.
Yeah, yeah. And then they're like, mm-hmm. you know what? I know of one that's only been used once. Mm. It's in this Oslo airport or whatever.
You can't go through the same turnstile twice because of the can't tip the pusher back rule that happens.
Yeah, 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 because the pusher back rule kind of thing.
Yeah,
which
stand that butcher back.
Because like literally he does it at the end, right? Like Neil does it. He goes through the turnstile twice in that location.
Yeah, but there's about half an hour in between. I think that's maybe it. Like, you can't go through the turnstile. Like, it's like swimming. Like, you need to wait half an hour after you eat.
Yeah, you wait half an hour before you go when through. They waited a week on that boat and went over to Oslo to go through the other turnstile, they could have gone back to the same one.
They could have just waited.
They could have just waited. That's right. This movie, it needs to be.
She's inverse.
Mm-hmm. She's inverse.
Yeah.
They're going all backwards and everything like that. And they come up with a plan. They're going to do a. Basically, we get the kick ass guy. He comes in.
Yeah.
And he's like,
Aaron Taylor Johnson,
yeah, I'm in this movie now. Basically, he's just skipped across from Godzilla into this movie.
Yeah.
And his name is Ives.
Like, I'm such a successful actor these days, I don't even make it into the trailer. Yeah, that's right. You didn't even know I was
not
in
at
this.
All.
Yeah.
Well,
surprise,
I mean,
mother.
Nolan kind of does that. I mean, like, he's got Matt Damon in Interstellar.
That's true.
Comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's his whole thing, right? Like, he just doesn't advertise anything from, like, the middle of the movie.
With that one, though, everyone was like, oh, look, it's Matt Damon. I can
that's
probably
true.
Count
they weren't
on
like, it's
one
Aaron
hand.
Taylor.
Yeah. Oh, it's Aaron
Taylor
Johnson.
Wow.
Playing like kind of Jason Statham Viking character. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it's crazy to think that he was Kick-Ass. Like, he looks so different.
He really
but anyways.
Does.
So, what happens next? They're going to do this time... inversion pincer move. So
temporal pincer movement.
Yeah. Temporal pincer movement.
So they go back in a week to the art thing and then go through, they fight themselves and then all that.
Yeah, they fight themselves, do all that again.
Mm-hmm. And then he meets up with Priya again, is like, what the hell, man? And then they're like, I want to be involved in this thing that you're plotting. Yeah.
So she's like, I'm going to go back an extra day to when we were in Vietnam together. And for some reason, there is this Seda leaves and then he comes back from the future. So it's future Seda, from my understanding.
Yes.
Comes back to this Vietnam point because he's ready to die.
Yeah.
And
so there's a line where they realize
it's the last time that they're happy, right? Yeah.
And there's a line and they kind of figure it out on the way back, is that the date that happened was the same day that Seda was actually in Russia as part of the opera sting. And so that's, there's a line there about that. And so then they realize, the version
line. That's great.
I picked up on this the second time around.
The second time, which is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sneaky.
Yeah. That's where realize that, that's future Russian guy. That's future Kenneth Branagh on the boat there that you were talking to. So that's our window. And then that's how they deduct the juice. That's probably where he's going to kill himself and set off the bomb. Right there. So that's
He is on the boat and Kat comes up to him and is like, hey, what's happening? Kind of thing. She's like just waited for herself to leave and sort of she sneaks on board and is hanging out on the boat and she's got a gun ready to kill him when she gets the okay from everyone that's doing the temporal pincer move in the next day in his hometown.
Frig.
So that's sort of going simultaneously at this point. And what's happening is they have a red team and a blue team. This is where it gets really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I really love this. Sick.
Yeah.
So, holy crap. One team is going in reverse, one team is going forwards. Mm-hmm. I think red team's going forwards, blue team's in reverse.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sounds about
right. Blue team's in reverse,
And so, Robert Pattinson, so Neil is in the reverse team and the protagonist is in the forwards team with Ives, with Kick-Ass.
Yep.
So, they're going in and they're basically going to defuse this, let's just call it a bomb. It's the nuclear bomb of some sort sort of thing.
Sure.
So, they're going in and while they're going in, there's a bunch of guys running backwards with explosions going in reverse and it's really cool with guys running forwards and explosions going just normal, like normal speed kind of thing.
There was a cool moment where there was this tower and inverse guy sees the tower, sees that it was destroyed. So then he blows up like a different portion. Mm-hmm. But then the in current time guy sees the tower and then blasts. It was little things. I still don't get what they're trying to do.
Now,
but
here's a question. Yeah. So because there's two explosions of the tower kind of happening at the same time, one in reverse, one backwards. Yeah. And so so the bottom of the tower comes forms back as the top explodes and vice versa. Question
really cool.
With that building, was that building ever fully intact?
I don't know.
No.
How weird is that?
It's like that kid from The Matrix. There is no spoon.
It's another paradox.
It is a paradox. Yeah. And they do talk about the grandfather paradox which I really liked because it means that there's one constant and that's wherever they are present, which is cool.
So here's another theory.
What's that?
Okay, so we were talking about how Max is young Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
Then what if Michael Caine is old Robert Pattinson? No, that doesn't work because... No, never mind. Never mind. We find out that
his name's Neil in the as next scene.
Yeah, no. Never mind. Move on. Push on. Maybe Michael Caine is old John David Washington.
maybe.
All English people are the same in this movie.
Yeah.
There is one person.
Yeah, we do find that out soon. Anyway, He finds his way into this bunker, and as they're sort of going into it, into the entrance of this sort of mine shaft sort of thing, there's a car coming down, beeping its horn at them, trying to stop them from going through.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of just keep running anyways, and it's they actually, trigger an explosion.
Turns out that's actually Russell Crowe, really angry that someone cut him off.
That's right.
He's unhinged.
He's unhinged,
So they run into this mine shaft, and they find where this device is, and it's on the other side of a locked doorway. And he sees a dead body on the ground with a red tag. He recognizes the distinctive red tag from the very beginning of the movie, which doesn't really make sense. But anyways, like it it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense to his character kind of thing. And he finds like the head goon that gets ordered to kill him. From the past version of Sator, who is on the boat because somehow they can communicate through time.
Actually, I think at this point it's happening at the same point in time. I'm pretty sure. It's not a day.
Oh, because she goes back a day extra, but it's actually playing out that day.
She
right?
only goes back a day to like make more time to travel heal and to heal and get to Vietnam on time.
That's right. Yep. That's you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yep. So that's like I got mixed up with that. So they're getting a call at the same time, and basically he's like, you got to kill the protagonist. Oh my god, his name is so stupid. It's so dumb.
I mean, it has, like when I first watched the movie, I was one of those Tyler Durden kind of scenarios where I didn't even pick up on the fact that the main character didn't actually have a real name. And now every time you said it,
literally goes, you're the protagonist.
And he even at one point goes, I am the protagonist. But I just thought like he was just like, he just had an overinflated ego. I didn't realize that he had no other name.
No.
It's just like general conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm the protagonist in this story. Like I often say that about story, myself. By the way. I don't go about my day calling myself the protagonist instead of Dean.
No, exactly. Yeah. Help yourself if you want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm annoying. The protagonist.
Shut up, protagonist.
So they basically, the body on the ground, just as he's about to get killed by the goon, because Kenneth Branagh is like, kill him. And the body on the ground jumps up and gets in the way of the bullet and dies. And when this happened, I didn't fully see what was going on. I was like, what the hell? And then the door unlocks as well. So, and we realize that body, like, it sort of goes in reverse and it runs out of the room.
So, he undies, he gets unshot, then unlocks, and then runs back.
Propels up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's very confusing.
It is very confusing.
I love it.
So, then he's able to get in there and kill the head goon, and he gets the device. And we sort of then see the events play out by Neil's perspective, and Neil realizes that there is the head goon running, like coming, or one of the goons coming, and he's setting up an explosive charge at the entrance to the mine shaft. Mm-hmm. And he realizes that he's not going to be able to save the protagonist by going inverted. So he goes back through naturally so that he's back going the right way.
Yes.
Uninverts himself.
Reverts.
And drives the car around, and he's the one beeping the horn at them, trying to stop them from going in the mine shaft in the first place.
Yeah.
Yes.
For some reason, he realizes that they're down below and they're exactly where they need to be. And he drives directly above them and lowers a little, like, rope down.
Yeah.
And gets them out kind of thing.
So, he would have...
I don't know how he knows that.
Similar thing to how the red team know about the layout because the blue team told them. The same thing happens to the blue team. They get told at the end of this about like the layout and stuff from the red team. Right. And they go
That's
back.
That's right.
Yeah. So
of course,
another
yeah.
paradox.
They're getting a briefing in an hour or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. They're basically yeah. giving, relaying so, the same information to each other from the different points in time.
Right. That yeah. makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is why it's called the temporal pincer move.
Yep.
So they literally shouldn't, if the if it wasn't such a paradox, nobody should die, right? Like, they should be able to attack them without any casualties.
Stop.
yeah,
you gotta stop yeah, doing yeah. this. so, we so, keep getting inverse.
So they save the day basically, yeah. and they have like a little conversation mm-hmm. where the protagonist is like it's great to meet you basically,
mm-hmm.
and Neil's like, yeah, we just saved the world. This is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that I've got to go do one thing. I've got to actually invert myself again and go back down. And you realize that yeah. he's the red tag person oh. from the beginning that saved the protagonist's yeah. life. And he's also the guy that just picked the lock in front of him and got shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to knowingly, sort of semi-knowingly, go into his future ready to die but save the world.
Crazy.
And the protagonist sort of thinks for a moment and he's like, basically, do I warn him?
Mm.
But they've been sort of telling each other throughout the whole time that you don't interfere with the future and all that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, we don't. That's it. And so, whose rule is that? That's ours.
I don't know. Yeah, we don't interfere with the future, but we literally have machines that we can go into the past.
fun.
Yeah.
Fun times.
Don't interfere with it, though.
They also
that's
decide,
literally what yeah, they're doing.
They decide to split up the artifact and hide yep. it in different points in time yep. and then
yeah,
possibly kill themselves.
Possibly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Aaron Neil Taylor tells, Johnson sets up a sequel, apparently. Which would be...
What? Really?
Well, yeah. It's just like, oh...
It'll be coming out... It came out last year, right?
It's called Godzilla.
Yeah.
Well, he's based... I got to the end of this movie and thought, is he... like? Is Christopher Nolan doing something he's never done before? And
a sequel bait.
Sequel baiting one of his
Well, he
crazy
has done
ideas.
A sequel. He's done the Dark Knight trilogy, but yeah.
Apart from the like comic, the Batman, the Dark Knight series, like something that's not like something that's an yeah. original concept, he's yeah. sequel baiting. Because the theory is that like potentially, if they do like decide to make this like a one and two parter, the sequel doo-doo. Is.
Hmm? He said doo-doo.
Oh,
yeah,
he
said doo-doo. Carry on. Yep, yeah, the doo-doo.
If we,
a sequel.
If we
a doo-doo sequel.
Want to see this. No, so John David Washington will see him and his history in the past, like recruiting RPATs, getting more kind of information there. But also have Aaron Taylor Johnson's character, who has like a bit of an open-ended threat, saying like, oh, yeah. if I see like, you know, if I, like, the next time I see you, I'll kill you kind of thing. And it's like, oh, yeah, surely you won't look very hard. He goes, yeah, I will. And he walks off. It's like a hunt through time kind of thing, which could be cool.
Maybe he's already killed them.
Oh,
maybe he's actually killed John David Washington, like in the past, in his past.
Maybe, but yeah.
Anyways, yeah. that's
yeah, we'll
the
find
end
out
of the
in
movie.
The sequel. Yeah,
we can theorize all we want, really. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't want to see a sequel to this. I think it's dense enough.
Yeah,
and if you added more to it, it might ruin it.
Yeah, I agree.
But
I'm very happy with having
that's
this
just
as
my
a
thought.
Standalone.
It's definitely worth a rewatch. Yeah. Will you watch it a third time, do you reckon?
I think so. Well, maybe they could release a sequel, but actually it's just this movie in reverse. And then...
Well, this movie is kind of this movie in reverse. But, yeah, anyways.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely watching it a third time with subtitles.
It's definitely Memento. Like, it's like Christopher Nolan with his, like, time paradoxes and, like...
Every movie is something.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's always something that, like, even in, like, I suppose it's not as much. It's just montages
yeah.
that he loves in The Dark Knight. But it's, like, the compression of time and stuff. Yeah. It's just very...
But, yeah, The Dark Knight is his most linear movie, I think.
It's, yeah.
I think Well, Dunkirk is to an extent, but it's got three.
Dunkirk is literally a linear movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's got three linear stories that are not linear, if that makes sense.
There's no snipers catching bullets in Dunkirk.
That's true,
But, like, the prestige
is unsinking.
The prestige is literally, like, just going through two people's diaries and recounting previous
history.
Inception is bloody Inception. And, Batman Begins is full of flashbacks.
But, it's full of flashbacks. It, like, I mean,
movies can have flashbacks, though. Like, that's not really distorting time.
It's still telling a story.
It is. It's not a linear movie, though. Mm. Like, I wonder if it'd be... Because to me, like, Dunkirk, to me, is probably his weakest movie. I know, like, that's an unpopular opinion. Jeez. But,
Jeez.
But you're right, I think it's because the concepts on display are not as, like, high, like... They're not as high concepts kind of thing that are going on. Mm-hmm. And the characters kind of are lacking a little bit.
In Dunkirk?
In Dunkirk, yeah. Mm. They don't have it is very...
Some characters are better than others in Dunkirk.
Yeah, some characters are definitely better than others.
Sure.
But overall, it's kind of a little bit cold in the character department for me.
Mm.
That's why it's not... as high on my list, but I only watched that movie once, so probably maybe it'd be different
the
second time.
What sucks is that movie came out just as IMAX Sydney closed, because I feel like that is the movie that would have appreciated.
That would have been great.
So, like, it was built for an IMAX theater, and
it really was.
Yeah. I feel like as soon as the new IMAX opens up, I really hope they screen Dunkirk, because I would love to watch that movie the way it was meant to be watched.
Yeah, it'd be really good.
That would be cool.
That would be good. Mm. Anyway, so let's wrap this up with Birds. How many Birds do you give this out of 5, Dean? Where does it land?
Hi, I'm Dean. So...
That's funny.
I was waiting.
That's funny.
Welcome to Nerds Before Birds.
Oh, you geese.
Yep.
I reckon
that was good. I'm glad you liked it. Paul, what did you think of this movie?
I already told you.
I know.
No, I'm kidding. I'm probably give it 3.
Yep.
3 Birds.
3.
Yeah. It was alright.
Yeah, right. Wow, that's actually lower than I thought you'd go.
It was long, it was good, but I don't know, I think I left it, like, I don't really want to go and see it again, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not because it was a bad movie, I just, it is what it is, and I'm cool with that.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Dean, where does it land for you?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4, and I strongly encourage 4? A second watch.
Yeah.
Encourage away.
I strongly will.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I bloody hope so.
Okay. Four, I reckon. I thought it was really cool. I did definitely did appreciate it more on the second watch. There were kind of moments that I wanted, like, I forgot to study it as much as I wanted to, because there were moments where I was meant to, in the second watching, I wanted to go back and rewatch, like, the plane crash to see if I could pick up on, like, anyone moving in reverse in the background to kind of, like, pick up on, you know, tidbits like that. And then I kept getting caught up in the moment again, and I missed those scenes. But then there was other things that made a lot more sense. And, I think it's one of those going to be another Nolan movie where the more you watch it, the more you pick up on and the more you appreciate it. But, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Very keen.
Cool.
That's Jason, cool. What do you get?
Jason.
I think I'm with you, Dean, with that. I think 4 as well. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like, it's kind of like it is a little bit worrying for Nolan in the way that I feel like it's not as good as these other movies. And I think he's set a high bar for himself.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, like, yeah, I'm wondering, like, I just wonder if his next movie is not going to be as good.
I feel like since Inception has always been the fear, like, how the heck can you keep topping yourself,
top this,
Chris Nolan?
Yeah.
And he's had a run of really great films, and they keep being impressive in different ways.
The first time I watched Interstellar, I didn't like it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I remember
that. I
didn't
like Interstellar. Because, and now I love it.
Yeah.
Like, actually really, like, going back and watching it again. But the things that I didn't like is, like, I still kind of find it a bit stupid, but it's like, they get saved by the power of love, basically. that's kind of dumb.
That's fair.
Like, really stupid. And that was kind of my...
But that is a great song. I'm just saying.
Like, that was my feeling when I watched that. I was like, that's really stupid. And again, it has that kind of... The future people, like, save the day. The future people made it. And... But in that, it's like we made it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But
whereas in this movie, the future people are just stuffing it up for everyone.
They're just
like
dicks.
It's just the future people. Dicks. Well,
stop inverting crap. Back to our time, you jerks.
Yeah.
Inverse their time Godzilla.
Basically doesn't exist because it's just like all desert land, right?
Bunch of punks.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. That's where it lands for me. But that brings us to the end of this week's podcast or the beginning of this week's podcast, however you're listening to it, whatever. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/nerdsbeforebirds. You can contribute any amount starting at $1 a month, and that just helps us to keep the lights on. Otherwise, if you can't contribute financially and you want to support us in another way, write a review on whatever platform you're on. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're Nerds Before Birds on all of those, except for Twitter, where we're Nerds Before Bird singular. And that's a bye from me. I don't know what we're doing next week.
We'll figure it out. We'll find out what we did
maybe last
Mulan?
Week.
I don't know.
So we've already recorded. I'm not doing Mulan. I'm not renting a movie off a subscription service that I steal off you.
I'm not really a fan of that.
Hey, if you rent Mulan, can you let me know?
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know what your candy jars are.
All right. That's a bye from me.
Hype.
Hi, I'm Paul.
Nice.
Yeah.